Good afternoon. It is a Monday, July the 16th, 2018, kicking off your work week here. 14 minutes coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, and sometimes timing is everything. I would imagine many people were glued to their television sets over the last hour as we heard the joint news conference between President Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin of Russia, which ended about 14 minutes ago. And now to discuss what happened, one of our favorite guests, she's a panelist on the long-running political talk show, the McLaughlin Group, which can be found on YouTube if it's not in your area. Search McLaughlin Group on YouTube and you can see the episodes. And she's also a contributor writer for the Daily Beast, Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, very interesting last hour.
Yes, we saw the president and the president of Russia share a stage and take two questions each. And what we saw was remarkable in the sense that the president really took the opportunity to go over a lot of familiar ground, calling the Mueller probe ridiculous, and saying that he believed the Russian president, that he had nothing to do with interfering in the 2016 election, despite the dozen indictments handed down last week by Robert Mueller, fingering top officials in the Russian military, who President Putin surely knows about. There was a lot of, I think, lying on both sides, and you want to know why the president seems to want to downplay anything negative about Vladimir Putin, blame it all on, I think, the news media, the Democratic obstructionists, and even Hillary Clinton's name came up a number of times. The president is so sensitive about whether the charges of interference in the 2016 election somehow mar his election. He said he won easily. And he said, you know, why would the Russians want to interfere in the election? Well, there are lots of reasons, but we won't go into them right now. But the tweets afterward, John Brennan, the former CIA director under Obama, who was getting all of the signals in the summer of 2016, that the Russians were trying to interfere in the election. He tweeted that this performance was treasonous and that it indicates the president is wholly in the pocket of Putin. So this press conference is going to, you know, fuel the firestorm here at home. And whether anything substantive came out of it, there was some talk about fixing the problems in Syria, and both presidents really want to help the people in Syria, and a possible deal worked out with Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. No details, really. And any follow-up concrete progress in any of the areas that were discussed is going to be left to the mutual national security teams. But the president did sort of boast that the U.S. military and the Russian military get along very well. They get along better than the diplomats. So I don't know quite what that means. So it was extraordinary also from the sense of body language. President Trump did have some notes in front of him that he occasionally referred to. And Putin always kind of looks like he's just kind of stopping by, and he's kind of slouching and all of that, but you know, clearly the two of them are in accord, and of course everybody wants to know what transpired between the two of them when they met only with translators. I mean, we may not know that in the short term, but that's a key question. And I must say that the reporter from AP really hammered home the hard questions at the end about what did President Trump say to you about Crimea, was the question he posed to Vladimir Putin. And then he asked Putin, do you have any compromising material on President Trump and his family? Mr. Putin basically said that he knows how to compile dossiers And he kind of smirked when he got the question. And he said, he claims that he didn't even know that Donald Trump was in St. Petersburg for that beauty pageant in the year in question. And that's not true either. anyway, there's lots to parse here. And, you know, what it all means going forward is, you know, I think Robert Mueller better make sure he has his facts in a row. I think he's doing very well so far. And I look forward to seeing what he comes up with in the next phase of the investigation when he begins to lay out the Americans that were likely involved in collusion with the Russian hackers he has already indicted.
You know, Eleanor, if the Trump supporters are out there, now here's the question I don't understand. Now, we know two things. Going into the 2016 election, that Putin hated Hillary Clinton. He said it today. He said, "I did not want her to win." He said, right. I preferred President Trump. And we know he wanted to undermine the way we do our Democratic elections. Now, if it had been Marco Rubio as the Republican candidate, it's quite possible that they could have still tried to interfere. But the question I have, if I am putting my mind in a Trump supporter's head, let's say they did interfere and President Trump knew nothing about it, no collusion, which he keeps saying, which is totally believable because he didn't like Hillary, he wanted to undermine America. Why is President Trump so hesitant to say anything to President Putin about that?
Well, I have my suspicions, and again, I think we have to wait for the facts to come out, but I do the old Watergate mantra, you know, follow the money. In 2008, Donald Trump Jr. said in an interview that an inordinate amount of our money comes through Russia. This was at a time when American banks wouldn't lend Donald Trump any money because he was a bad business risk, and he was basically relying on Deutsche Bank, which was dealing with Russia. And if you want to really get into all the connections that exist, the banker at Deutsche Bank was Justin Kennedy, who is the retiring Justice Kennedy's son, and he worked closely with Donald Trump. And again, this has been documented in many articles, but you know, I think I leave the facts and the conclusions to Robert Mueller. But a lot of the money that Deutsche Bank was dealing with came from Russian oligarchs, and so I think there is a financial connection between Russia and Donald Trump that he does not want exposed in chapter and verse. And there's also the existence of a possible compromising tape, which is what Putin was questioned about directly today, and he obviously didn't really answer that. He just answered in sort of broad terms, describing his life as a former intelligence officer and claiming he didn't even know Trump was in Moscow during that beauty pageant when allegedly this compromising tape was made. So that's been a rumor that's been out there for a long time. And I think a lot of people do believe that Putin, you know, has something on Trump, because Trump's behavior is just so out of the norm for an American president to veer so wildly away from traditional alliances and to, you know, buddy up to Vladimir Putin at a time when Europe and other Western allies are really concerned that Putin is trying to expand his territory. He's invaded Ukraine to take Crimea and the Baltic republics, which were formerly held by the Soviet Union, are very nervous about Putin and his expansionist visions, and he's essentially president for life. I mean, he's won another 6-year term. I think he's the longest world leader now in power, and he's very savvy. You know, his demeanor is not, when you look at him, he is this guy kind of slouching and looking like he's barely paying attention. But he's outfoxed several American presidents here. And so we'll have to see what comes out of this summit. Substantively, I don't imagine there will be much, but maybe some good can come out of it in terms of getting a political settlement in Syria. Now, that would be very positive if they could pull that off.
Now, Friday, we saw Mueller's team indict 12 Russians. Now, that was a big point of contention today, that Putin is not going to release these people to the United States. But I read the report on Friday, and there's two things in that report that stick out to me. One of the things that stuck out in this indictment of these 12 Russians was that the day that Donald Trump made the infamous comment at the rally, Russia, see if you can find Hillary Clinton's emails, they did look that day.
Right. I know. I mean, and the fact that they mention that in that report is significant, because you don't have to be too conspiracy-minded to wonder if, when Trump said that, that was in effect the starting gun for them to start releasing this material. You know, the question is, you know, what did Donald Trump know? When did he know it? Was he completely unwitting tool here? Were there other people in the Trump universe who knew more? Roger Stone, longtime Republican kind of dirty trickster, has basically said that he's the American who's named in the indictment, who was in touch with Guccifer, who was a made-up name for the Russian, trolls and bots and all of that. And the other thing that Putin did today was President Trump said this was a great offer that he made. He said he offered to work with the Mueller probe as they are investigating these Russian military officers who were named. But he said he would want equal access to persons of interest in the probe in this country. So I think that's probably not an offer that Mueller's going to take him up on. But it sounds good in a press conference like that. And obviously, I think President Trump must have thought, oh, this is a good idea. You know, he'll work arm in arm with Mueller to get to the bottom of this, because surely it's not Russians. Why would Russians do this? So I don't know who they would be looking for. Maybe that 400-pound kid on the sofa that Trump once referred to during the campaign. So there was just a lot of, misdirection going on in this press conference.
The other thing in Friday's indictment that I found interesting, they were trying to hack in to voter information here in the United States, and they think 500,000 people's information was exposed. That's a lot of people.
Right. And a lot of this has now launched investigations into, you know, what Facebook allowed and how they used Facebook. I mean, it was an incredible breach of American cyber security. And people, you know, if they had actually sent troops into all of these places to get people's information, you know, we'd be pretty alarmed. But to do it over the internet and in cyberspace, I mean, people can't quite grasp what an assault this is on our democracy. And in the end, Putin has really gotten what he wants, which is to sow discord in American democracy, and not only American, and in Europe. He's divided the European Union. He's NATO, set NATO back on its heels, and he's done that all through President Trump. I mean, Trump has disrupted all of these institutions that have, I think, served us quite well for 70 years. And Putin has always resented the fact that the West was aligned against him. And I think, you know, some conservatives do make a legitimate argument that by pulling Ukraine too close to NATO, that was right on Putin's border, and that how would we feel if Putin were exercising leverage in Mexico? Of course, with Trump, maybe he wouldn't mind giving Mexico to Russia if his animus is so great, but that aside. And what Putin really wants is for the U.S. to cede him a sphere of influence where he can operate unimpeded, and the West has been unwilling to do that. And so now he's got Trump as his partner, and you have to look at this press conference as really, you know, a love fest between these two leaders. Compare this performance to the president's performances last week with Theresa May of the United Kingdom and Angela Merkel of Germany. Much more hostility to those two leaders than he didn't show any hostility to President Putin. He said he's a strong competitor, and he turned and said that's a compliment. So I think, you know, they really do seem to get along. Now, whether anything positive can come out of that on Syria, I think remains to be seen. And I think there's just a lot of anxiety in this country about an American president moving so closely to what is really a mostly hostile foreign power, and what the subtext is for that. Is it his personal business that's at the heart of this, or is there some personal compromising material that he is trying to keep hidden? And the hostility against the Mueller probe goes hand in glove with his embrace of Putin, and the two are definitely connected.
It's interesting to me because the two big rounds of indictments that we have had, the first time it happened, the big news was that Russians definitely did interfere, definitely did prefer President Trump, and definitely wanted to discredit Hillary Clinton. Now, as of Friday, we know that 500,000 people's personal information was hacked. They were trying to get into voting booths and records and things of that nature, even power grids at one point. Attorney General Rosenstein keeps saying at these press conferences, well, we don't think that it had any effect on changing the outcome of the election. But yet, this investigation's not over. I think it's interesting he keeps saying that, and we keep moving them. If they preferred President Trump for whatever reason, we don't know, and they got 500,000 people's personal information, and we do believe that the election was only won by 70,000 votes. How close are we going to get without actually saying that this was swung the other way?
Well, Rosenstein works for the Justice Department, and he works for Donald Trump. Now, there's one step removed, but Donald Trump is in a position to fire him if he chose. And I get the feeling that Rosenstein includes that because it's technically true. He includes that so as to not set off Trump. I mean, because that is what Trump is really bothered by, that this somehow mars his the legitimacy of his election. And there are lots of mistakes that Hillary Clinton made, and so I think you can argue, well, this one thing may have altered the outcome of the election, but maybe it was also altered because she didn't go back to Michigan. She was only there once in August and didn't go there for the entire fall campaign, or she didn't have a message that appealed to white working class Americans in these key states. So you can't say with certainty that yes, this is what threw the election. But you know, frankly, if Mueller came out with a strong indictment of Trump campaign encouragement / collusion with these hackers, you would, you know, wish that there could be a do-over in the election. Our Constitution does not provide for that. The Constitution provides for the impeachment of a president, which is a very difficult thing to do. Easy to get a majority vote in the House of Representatives if the Democrats take back control in September. But to get a conviction to remove him from office, you would need 2/3 of the Senate. And I don't see that happening. And, you know, in baseball, they put an asterisk next to people in the Hall of Fame or whatever who were later found out to have taken steroids or whatever against the rules. So, I think the way this is going to be resolved is for re-election. And if Donald Trump is not re-elected, I think the whole Russian probe will go down as his asterisk, as what compromised his presidency and made it difficult for him to get reelected. But he is working so hard to get reelected, and today I just saw an article today in the New York Times that he has raised $88 million so far for his reelection. And he filed for reelection on the afternoon of, or his people did, on the afternoon of the inauguration in 2017. So I think, you know, the legitimacy of his election is at the heart of his strong response to the Mueller probe, and it's at the heart of his really significant drive for reelection that has begun, you know, less than 2 years into his term.
You know, Eleanor, the thing that's been in my mind is not necessarily what the House or the Senate will do. What's worrying me is the next Supreme Court appointee could possibly overturn Roe versus Wade, could possibly send it back to the states, same-sex marriage, who knows what will happen with that, what people are allowed to sell and not sell to people. If the report from Mueller comes back and says that there was collusion on top of that, and basically that draw your own conclusions, Hillary Clinton should have won the election, I'm not so much worried about what the people in Washington are going to do. I'm worried about what the people in the United States are going to do. A lot riding on that.
Well, I think the Democratic resistance that was initially inspired by Trump's victory and Hillary Clinton's defeat, which manifested itself so strongly on that weekend after his inauguration with the Women's March, and the number of women in particular who are running, the number of resistance groups that have sprung up across the nation. So they've got to maintain their momentum through the long, hot days of summer and into the fall and really rally people to show up to vote. Now, that's the Democratic, big D Democratic side, the Hillary Clinton side, I guess you would say. The Trump side, what we know about his supporters is that they basically believe the view of the world that he is putting out, that this is all a witch hunt, that it's made up, that it's, it's Democratic sour grapes because they didn't win an election they should have won, as he pointed out, because he says the Electoral College is tilted towards the Democrats. He even quoted the numbers from his win. He had a strong Electoral College win thanks to those three battleground states that he pocketed that were assumed to be part of Hillary Clinton's blue wall. So I think Trump supporters It's a smaller number. A number of traditional Republicans have walked away from him, particularly here in Washington. That may not be true around the country, but his base is going to believe him and is going to follow him. I don't see anything yet that will persuade his base to get off his bandwagon. Except maybe, I mean, the tariffs are beginning to bite, and it's the Midwestern states, where his base is strong, and workers there are likely to pay the highest price. And maybe if they see that he's not able to fulfill his promise to, you know, bring jobs, that will cause him to drop, drop their support. But so far, you know, his base is holding strong. So what will they do if a report from Mueller comes out suggesting collusion? They'll say it's the FBI is corrupt. They were out to get him. It's the deep state. I mean, they'll just buy all of Trump's arguments, and I think he's been very successful in making that case to the people who want to believe him.
Interestingly enough, President Trump did talk about Hillary Clinton today in his press conference, and Hillary Clinton tweeted last night, a great World Cup question for President Trump as he meets with Putin. Do you know which team you play for? And she also gave a speech, I believe it was yesterday or today, in which she heavily criticized the immigration policy that's going on. She's starting to come back out there. Is it just to be a needle in Trump's side?
Yeah, I mean, I do not see her mounting another race. I mean, even though it looks like she really got shafted by the FBI, by James Comey treating her investigation differently from the one that had been opened on Donald Trump. I mean, it is still shocking to me that Americans went to the polls in 2016 fully aware that Hillary Clinton had been scrutinized by the FBI, had been cleared, then been had the investigation reopened, and then was cleared just days before the vote. They had no idea that an FBI investigation was ongoing into Donald Trump. And that's how it should have been. I mean, the FBI handled the Trump investigation by the book, and nothing leaked. Although, you know, people in Washington, some reporters, the Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid knew that this investigation was going on, wrote a letter to the FBI Director James Comey asking him to release the information to let the voters know, and nothing happened. So, having said all that, Hillary Clinton got shafted. I don't see any groundswell for her to get back in the campaign. And, you know, some people think that she really shouldn't be out there because she's like salt in the wound of the people who didn't like her and who voted for Trump. I think she certainly has earned a place in the arena, and in certain districts and states she will be an asset, but I don't see her as a key campaign, you know, surrogate this fall.
Something I don't understand, and a lot of people have asked me this. Now, we do know that President Obama went to Mitch McConnell and said, this is what's going on with Trump. He's under investigation because of these ties to Russia. And Mitch McConnell threatened, apparently, President Trump and said, if you release that, it'll look like a tainted election, so on and so forth. Okay, I think we all understand that. But what I don't understand is when Comey reopened the investigation before the election, why didn't President Obama say anything then? He had to know that was going to hurt her. He couldn't be that naive.
Yeah, but how could, I mean, first of all, Obama respected the line between the White House and the Justice Department. The Justice Department reopened the investigation because they had suddenly discovered all of these emails that were on the computer of Congressman, I guess he was no longer Congress, former Congressman Weiner, who was married to Hillary Clinton's aide, Huma Abedin. They were estranged by then, but she had apparently sent him a lot of emails, some of which were classified, and to print them out. And so, excuse me, and so that merited opening investigation. President Obama couldn't say, don't open it, don't tell the congressional committee. If he had intervened that way, that would have been a pretty explosive act. And you have to always keep in mind that everybody assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win. Nobody could conceive that Donald Trump was going to win. And so all the powers that be kind of soft-pedaled any information that might disrupt the dynamics of a race that they thought heavily favored Hillary Clinton. So those are wrong judgments, and I must say, in hindsight, President Obama should have said to Mitch McConnell, our country is being attacked. I'm not going to sit this out, and I think the American people deserve to know this. He should have, spoken out more strongly, and I think he would probably agree with that now. But and I think the media also, collectively, we didn't really do our job. When all of those emails came out, instead of really questioning where did they come from and who got them, the focus was on the juicy little tidbits in the emails, and a lot of delight at seeing the inner workings of the Clinton campaign and her difficulty in coming up with a message and the frustration of AIDS. So media focus was in the wrong place at that time as well.
Well, I guess what I'm not saying that he should have intervened when Comey wanted to look at the emails 10 days before the election. What I'm saying is that he and Mitch McConnell had already had that conversation about Russia at that time. When Comey decided to make that public, I'm not saying he should have stepped in, but if Comey was going to do that at that point, why didn't he say, he had to know that was going to hurt her. Why didn't he say, hey, this is also going on too, by the way?
Yeah. I recently wrote an article for the Daily Beast looking back on the Merrick Garland nomination and asking the question, if a Democratic Senate had refused to give a hearing to a Republican president's nominee, when the president still had 11 months left in his term, what would that Republican president be doing? He would be going to the political convention and making it a big issue. He would be talking about it a lot. Barack Obama spoke beautifully at the Democratic convention in July on behalf of Hillary Clinton. He never said a word about Merrick Garland. In retrospect, he should have made a huge issue out of that. He always he measured his power. And I think that has to do with being the first African-American president. He respected the limits of his power, didn't want to push too far. And I think you could say that not speaking out more forcefully for Merrick Garland, he may not have won, but he may have energized Democrats in the November election more than they were energized. And secondly, if he had really made an issue out of the Russian involvement, that could have had an impact as well. He didn't do that in either of those instances, again, because he assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win. How could this country elect Donald Trump after all of the racist, misogynist things he had said? It just seemed like it couldn't happen. And so I think that that restrained people from speaking out the way they should.
Alan Dershowitz was on CNN the other night talking about his new book, and among other things, but he said he did not understand why President Obama when they said, we're not going to even hear Merrick Garland, we're not even going to hold hearings, he said he did not understand why President Obama did not swear him in and dare them to put him out.
Yeah, that would have been a bold move. Exactly. Again, he didn't do it because he thought Hillary Clinton could name him, and that was, as I recall, that was an object of a subject of discussion. You know, would Hillary Clinton install Merrick Garland out of deference to Barack Obama, who had helped her so much to win this election, or would she start off wanting to be her own person and, you know, proceed with her own nominee? And Garland was considered a compromise who could get through. And President Obama, I understand, was advised by Orrin Hatch, who'd been senior Republican, who'd formerly been chair of the Judiciary Committee, who basically said, with a compromise candidate, you might have a chance of actually seating him. Garland was, you know, in his 60s, not a wild-eyed liberal, and he wasn't in his 40s or early 50s, who would, you know, be there for four decades. So he was a compromise candidate, and, you know, but it didn't work. And with the benefit of hindsight, everybody underestimated Donald Trump and his ability to thread the needle to actually win the election.
I guess the interesting thing is, because there was a poll last week, I think it was a Pew poll, that said, in this lifetime, who is the greatest president? And President Obama won that poll. But the interesting thing to me is that when we do go back and history is written and we do pay attention to it, that whole thing from the time Hillary Clinton starts to run up through Supreme Court Justice Scalia dying, the whole problem there is this is Obama's government. Obama, this is his FBI. This is his FBI director. This is his attorney general. Hillary Clinton was his secretary of state. Obama knew about the FBI investigation into Russia. I don't know if Hillary Clinton did. He saw what happened 10 days before the election. He's a pretty savvy guy. He let Mitch McConnell block him. This was his government that essentially gave us Donald Trump. Had all these things not happened, it is highly unlikely that Hillary Clinton would have lost, I think.
Right. Again, you know, Obama's style of governing was marked by caution and restraint. And, you know, his foreign policy was don't do stupid stuff. Now, we're left with this mess in Syria, but he didn't get us involved in Syria like it was another Vietnam or another Iraq. So, I mean, that is his personal style and his governing style. And he always thought that reason would prevail. And again, in retrospect, some displays of Trumpian power might have served the president well in both the final days of the election, in revealing what was happening. And if he'd gotten this pushback from Mitch McConnell, well, so what? It was based on the assumption Hillary Clinton would win. James Comey acted on that same assumption. He felt compelled to reopen the investigation into Hillary and to announce it because he assumed she'd be elected and he didn't want her to start her presidency under a cloud. I mean, so everybody was fooled by Donald Trump's kind of clownish behavior that we were so unaccustomed to on the presidential stage, and didn't realize that he had really touched a nerve in America of people who were really tired of kind of business as usual. And, you know, they loved him for the fact that he could, you know, basically give the finger to everybody and everything. He could get away with anything. And that struck a chord with that those 70,000 votes in three states that that made the difference.
And you know, this is why I think we still talk about 2016, because every time there's an indictment, every time there's a press conference, it goes back to something was screwy with 2016. And you know, boy, I think Hillary Clinton really has a the more indictments I see and the more information I learn, I just think, boy, oh boy, does she really have a complaint against this country, and the investigation's not done yet.
Right. Well, but she's not going to challenge the FBI the way this president has. You'd think he was the one who lost. I mean, but he's discrediting the FBI because he's afraid of what Mueller's going to come out with. And he's got to make sure that his base thinks it's all a crock, and that the deep state is out to get him, and they should just go on with business as usual. And you know, if the Republicans still hold the House and the Senate, he's probably home free. If the Democrats do take the House, he could face impeachment. But you know, that could redound to his benefit. It did to Bill Clinton, because the Republican House impeached Bill Clinton, and the Republican Senate could not get a conviction, and Clinton's polls went up. So,
isn't,
be careful what you ask for; you may get it.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. Well, it isn't the premise here. Even Nixon and Clinton in recent times, aren't the stakes here though much higher when we consider Supreme Court,
well,
we consider whatever has been given, or with Russia, whatever's going on with NATO. Aren't the stakes a little higher here?
Well, with Clinton, there was an issue over lying about sex. And, you know, I'm not sure that's a high crime and misdemeanor, but nonetheless, that's what that was about. And Richard Nixon resigned before he could be impeached, because he knew he would be impeached and convicted if he stayed, because there were serious abuses of power in the way he used the FBI and the CIA. I think this is very serious, but so far, the president's own party, with very few exceptions, has basically just put up the white flag. They're not going after him at all, and so that, you know, that would have to change. And again, you know, depending on what Mueller comes up with, it might be something that really will persuade the Republicans that he is not fit to fill out his term. But we'll see. I mean, based on this president's performance so far, I don't see him walking away. And I do see him using the full power of his Twitter account and his bully pulpit to discredit the Justice Department and the various figures involved in the probe, and to continue his assault on the media as, you know, enemies of the people.
And
the fact that he used that language while he's abroad is also really disturbing.
Well, here's where I think the Clinton and Nixon things are a little different than Trump, and it goes back to today's joint press conference between Putin and Trump. Whether it's, if either one of these things come down the pike, number one, that the dossier is true and Putin has something on him, or that he owes money to Russia in some way and that's what Putin has on him, how can the Congress and Senate let the government continue to operate with, I understand it's very political, but operate with a Russian president holding something over the American president?
Well, if Mueller really is able to document that, you know, that will persuade some Republicans that this is indeed serious business. Or maybe Trump will say, you know, I've been, as he's been saying, nobody's been tougher on Russia than I. And you know, that of course is not true, but he will point to the 60 diplomats that he expelled after some Russian Can't even remember what it is they did, but he does have a litany of places where he's been tough, and there are sanctions against Russia that have not been removed. So, I mean, he will make his case. Again, it depends on the power of whatever Mueller comes up with, and I think the indictment last week of the Russians just sets the stage for, well, okay, who are the Americans that they dealt with? And so if he can identify some Americans, and if they turn out to be in the Trump campaign, or better yet, the inner circle or the Trump family, then the trail really does get pretty hot. And, you know, if you look at this president and his behavior, I mean, to use a stage in Helsinki, Finland, to run through all his standard spiel about Hillary Clinton and to focus on the FBI agent last week, Peter Strzok, and how he was an embarrassment. I mean, these are the things that eat at this president. I mean, because he brings them up, and you just have to nip him a little bit with a question, and out comes all of the defense that we've heard so many times before. So this is what bothers this president. And I mean, I feel like he's trying to outrun Mueller, and you know, so far he's winning, but I think Mueller's catching up.
In the end result, final question, we do have Kavanaugh, who's the Supreme Court nominee. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren stood on the steps of the Supreme Court with groups of people and said, we are not going to let this happen. Is there any way to stop it?
Very difficult, unless they somehow come up with a smoking gun here. And I, you know, Kavanaugh is a, he was a Republican operative who worked for Ken Starr, who went to Florida during the recount as part of the Bush team, who represented Elian Gonzalez when they wanted to keep the boy who come here from Cuba, wanted to keep him in the country. He's been identified with lots of Republican causes. But the Republicans have 50 votes, assuming John McCain is not able to get to Washington to vote, but they've got 50 votes, and that's all they need. And I don't see yet, anyway, I don't see Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski defecting over the abortion issue, because I think Kavanaugh is going to be, you know, smart enough, clever enough to avoid saying that he would actually vote to overturn Roe. I mean, he will vote to continually chip away at it. I have no doubt about that. But he will manage to say enough support for stare decisis, which is the phrase for precedent, respecting precedent, that I doubt that Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski would jump ship. And without them, you know, the Democrats really don't have the votes. But they have to fight hard nonetheless. They have to use the hearings to spotlight all of the issues that are now seriously in the crosshairs and try to get voters to understand they've got to turn out. And the only way you can reverse any of this is if you win elections. And so you gotta turn out your base. They can't stay home and just wish it were otherwise. It's every vote is needed. Badly.
Eleanor Clift of the Daily Beast and the McLaughlin Group. Eleanor, it's always fun. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'll be back with trivia in about 10 minutes.
For 9-5, webpage, CRT Mechanicals.